listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe. I'm Rob Daly. This is your weekly European football podcast. With me in studio today is Chris Parrott. Chris, what are we talking about this week?
Action-packed show, Rob. Juve are crowned champions days after winning the Coppa Italia. Monaco sign off as Ligue 1 winners in style. We'll discuss the future of Alexander Lacazette. He's leaving Lyon. We'll hear Carlo Ancelotti sing. Hamburg avoid relegation again. Plus, you went to Manchester to preview the Europa League final and spoke to some of Manchester United's England internationals in the build-up to Wednesday's big showpiece in Stockholm.
Yeah, I had a chat with Jesse Lingard and Phil Jones. I'll talk about that later. And we'll be hearing from the Times writer, Spanish football writer, Joe Castanelli, who's going to be talking to us about the final day of the season in Spain, where Real Madrid clinched the title with a 2-0 win. Malaga, Ronaldo on the score sheet, unsurprisingly, his 14th in 9 games. Chris, we're towards the end of the season now.
We are, very much so. It's warm outside. It's lovely, isn't it?
It's lovely, yeah.
And just when it gets lovely to go and watch and work at football, the season shuts down.
It does.
A summer season.
It does indeed. I mean, you think as well, I mean, obviously the domestic club football's coming to an end. Really, the Champions League final brings all that to an end. But we have the Confederations Cup as well. We have Women's Euro this year as well, don't we? The Women's European Championships.
We do, and we have the Under-21 Championships in Poland in less than a month. I hope England are better than they were 2 years ago when they were knocked out under Gareth Southgate in the group stage. There's some big players. Sao Niguez, I saw, was in the Spain squad. So I really like the Under-21s. You see players who very quickly become superstars. Bernardo Silva was the best player 2 years ago. Look where he is now at Monaco. And indeed with Portugal. So great tournaments. And yeah, the Confederations Cup is going to be interesting. Russia are in a right old mess, a right old pickle. Germany, a nod to the future. I think it's a big chance for those countries who have done well enough to qualify to blood youngsters in the country where they're going to play in a year. And I think it can have a big help for then the World Cup 12 months later.
Yeah, it certainly can. Okay, let's turn our attention to all things to do with the leagues, really, because some of these are now starting to get wrapped up. Shall we start with Ligue 1, Chris?
Yeah, why not?
Monaco wrapped up the title, not on the weekend, but midweek. And they're really, as you said there, they're really signing off in quite some way. Deserve winners.
Absolutely. Led from the front for most of the season, I think. How many times did we discuss, can they last the pace? Well, they finished the season with 12 straight league wins. That is some answer, as well as their European run. They were brilliant. They matched PSG's record in the end of 30 league wins in a season by winning at Rennes in the final game. 3-2, typically Monaco, typically bonkers and high scoring. They wrapped it up in midweek, beating Saint-Étienne at home. 17 years, their first title. And, of course, it ends PSG's era of massive dominance, not just winning 4 straight league titles, but how many points were they winning them by? And I was thinking on the way in today, I wonder if one of the coaches who's done best out of this season might just be Laurent Blanc, who you hear very little of. He's had basically a sabbatical. Everyone always said, well, yeah, he's won the title, he's won the cup in France, but anyone can do that. Well, Unai Emery, who's an extremely respected coach, hasn't been able to do it. And I wonder if Laurent Blanc's been sitting at home with every week that goes past when Paris Saint-Germain aren't going to be title and think my stock continues to rise.
Yeah, absolutely. A remarkable season for Monaco, for people who haven't seen them this year, Chris, and I'm sure many have. Could you sort of sum up their key players and the way they play and why they've managed to do it?
A mix of fearless youth, brilliant tactics from Leonardo Jardim, who's changed them from a defensive outfit really a couple of years back anyway to this brilliant free-flowing team who have scored 107 goals in 38 games, plus some very big, important, older, wise heads, Kamil Glick, Radamel Falcao, who has been managed superbly. They haven't pushed him to the point of injury. They've rested him and he's been massive. And they've been the best team and one of the best teams in Europe, let's be honest. They ran into Juventus. I think they would have had every chance of beating either of the Madrid clubs. But unfortunately, they were knocked out in the semi-finals of the Champions League. But in Ligue 1, they've been brilliant. And talk about a breath of fresh air. For a club that's been odd, sort of I think they've become everyone's second favourite team, given that Monaco were never that because they were this nouveau riche side who play in front of 10 people. Not quite 10, but you know what I mean. And it's sort of the club that you weren't supposed to like. But the way they have gone about, instead of signing players for huge money, they've basically a couple of years back decided to let's go and sign the best young players for, admittedly, a lot of money and offer them big wages, but very sensible tactics when they realised that they couldn't compete anymore with Manchester City or Real Madrid. They thought, well, we'll hoover up the best 19, 20-year-olds.
Absolutely.
And look at the team they've created.
They've done a very smart thing. And you look at this team, I'll say it again because it's worth remembering. These players were all in the same team together. Mbappe, Lemar, Bernardo Silva, Bakayoko, Mendy, Sidibe, too many to mention, Falcao, of course, the captain and the man who lifted the trophy midweek. You mentioned the young players that Monaco are signing, Chris. They've signed another, it would appear, because Anderlecht, by the way, a champion of Belgium for a 34th time. First season under their Swiss coach, René Weiler. But what's worth noting is that I think it was the general director, Herman van Holsbeek, says that Yuri Tielemans, a deal for him to go to Monaco, should be agreed by the end of the week. And it's a logical move, isn't it, for Yuri Tielemans? Don't go to necessarily already an established big gun because you might not play.
Yes, which is why the tactics that Monaco were the first team to adopt, I think Borussia Dortmund are trying it as well, is if
it's a good parallel. Those two are in the same
they
shop.
Are. And Monaco are a little bit ahead because I think they started that recruitment process a little early in terms of, you know, let's be honest, Kylian Mbappe, when he joined Monaco, had every European club after him. So yes, Monaco are still offering him big, big wages. But if you realise, as I said, if you can't compete at the top end of the market in terms of spending 80, 90 million on a player, then it seems like a very good second best option, if you like, or it might just be the best option for clubs like that. And yeah, I was at Old Trafford for that Anderlecht game against United in the Europa League. He was brilliant.
And I know Tielemans, yeah.
And I know he has been seen him on the telly. But
do you want to describe him? He's worth describing. People probably haven't seen him either
much. An extremely gifted technical
central
midfielder.
Yeah.
An eye for goal. So calm and composed. You know when you watch someone that young? I say that young, he's played a huge amount of football. I think he made his debut when he was 16,
yeah,
17.
I think so.
So he has played a lot of football and you can see that. He just looks a class operator and he'll fit into that Monaco team. And this is the model. Yeah, they might have to sell or they probably will lose a few of their players, Bernardo Silva in particular, maybe Bakayoko, maybe Fabinho, but they then have the next generation who are 2-3 years younger coming in, guys who have played a lot of football already. So Monaco are here to stay, I think, regardless of how many of their young stars they lose this summer.
So Paris Saint-Germain finishing the league season anyway with a disappointing 1-1 draw and hope to Caen, who do survive just about thanks to the 90th minute equaliser they got at the Parc des Princes. Paris Saint-Germain still competing for the French Cup and we'll be looking at the Cups next week, a lot of the Cup competitions that are finishing. Lyon got a 3-3 draw with Nice. This was fourth against third. Lyon failing to catch Nice, finishing 11 points behind them in Ligue 1 in the end. But Alexandre Lacazette scored twice in a thrilling 3-3 draw. Siri scored a penalty as well for Nice in the 90th minute. So Alexandre Lacazette, it was his 100th goal as well, that final one in Ligue 1. It seemed to be a goodbye for him, and it looks like Atletico is his destination. Chris, your thoughts on that?
Perfectly suited, I think. And I think he'll go and work under Diego Simeone, who might be there. I think he'll definitely be there for one more year. We'll speak about it with Joe in a minute. But the way he was when I was at the Calderon, walked into both press conferences, didn't look like a man who was about to leave Atletico this summer. Griezmann maybe did, and those pictures of him in tears, I just wonder if he thought, OK, this is my last chance to win it with Atletico. However, him and Lacazette, two France internationals, maybe that might persuade Griezmann to stay. I don't think it will. Again, we'll get Joe's thoughts in a moment. I think it's the perfect move for Lacazette, who I just wonder at one stage this season whether he was going to quite fulfil his potential, but he's come roaring back, particularly in the second half of the season.
You look at it now, 25-year-old French striker. He'll turn
25.
Yeah, he'll turn 26 in a few days, Chris. 28th of May, his birthday. 28 league goals this season, 21 last season. That was after a poor start to the campaign. And 27 the season before, when many thought he would leave, but he decided to stay because he knew the Euros were coming and he didn't make the France squad anyway.
They have a ludicrous quota of strikers.
Yeah, and I'm sure they didn't think Mbappe was going to... I mean, the French Football Federation, without question, knew Mbappe was close, but not that close.
Good luck fitting those into a team, didn't
you? Yeah, exactly.
They'll probably still start with Olivier Giroud.
Okay, Chris, let's talk about Ligue 2. Now, we don't really talk about Ligue 2 very much, but you mentioned it last week that it was a title race. We're going into the final day. Any one of the top six could win the league.
Yeah.
So do you want to explain what happened on the final day?
Well, they all won, remarkably. So as you were, but it wasn't quite as straightforward as that. Boil it down, Strasbourg went into the weekend top, finished as champions. It was ridiculously dramatic behind that. So Amiens scored the winning goal with the very last kick of their match. That elevated them from outside of the top three to second and automatic promotion in a second. It was Troyes who were dropped from second to third, so they'll play a promotion playoff against Lorient. It was an absolutely balmy end to a mad season. And amazingly, Amiens and Strasbourg both won promotion together from the third tier 12 months ago. So they have both won back-to-back promotions and will play in Ligue 1 next season. And for Strasbourg, it is the end of a very long rise back up the footballing ladder. Champions in the 70s, a big club in a big city. You know, Strasbourg is famous over the globe, not just for the European Parliament, but it's a big club. They were liquidated in 2011. I think they went down to the fifth tier, and they've slowly worked their way back up, and they'll be back in the top tier. But it was one heck of an end.
It certainly was when Emmanuel Borgard scored that 90th minute winner. If you haven't seen that yet, it's very, very much worth watching. And some of those teams may fancy their chances of winning the league. I mean, Monaco were in Ligue 2 four seasons ago, which is quite incredible given that they seem to be champions in mainstays and they're champions
and
once again.
I saw, was it last year when Caen and somebody else came up and then did extremely well? Certainly Nice have shown that third Champions League spot can be up for grabs. Although, and we forgot to say actually in Ligue 1, see how Marseille finished the season under Rudy Garcia?
Go on.
They crept into fifth place and therefore are in Europe in the third qualifying round.
They've really sort of done that under the radar,
haven't they?
A little bit.
Disastrous
aside
start.
From signing Payet.
Yeah, well, yeah, it probably helped, yeah. Unbeaten in 11 to finish the season, Rudy Garcia got them going. And again, another summer of improvement. You sense that Ligue 1, it was sort of laughed at by many when Paris Saint-Germain were winning it by however many points. But now you've got Paris Saint-Germain, Nice, Monaco, Marseille and Lyon. That was the top five this season. It's definitely a lot more competitive. And Unai Emery must be thinking, why did I have to go to Paris just as everybody else improved?
Also worth noting that John Bostock, who once upon a time, having made his debut at the age of 15 for Crystal Palace, was named Ligue 2 Player of the Year for his achievements with Lens.
Second best thing he's done after ending Simon Jordan's association with football.
Okay. Chris, what do you want to talk about now? Do you want to briefly talk about Russia?
Yeah, let's talk about Russia.
We are going to get onto Italy and Spain, of course, and Germany and everything, but a quick one on Russia because the Champions League place was for grabs of the weekend. I commentated on Spartak losing away at a lowly Arsenal Tula, who survived on the final day. They go into a relegation playoff by beating a much-changed Spartak side. And it will probably be the final game for Quincy Promes, the Dutch international winger, best player in Russia, surely going to a big boy in the summer. Going to a big boy, not becoming a big boy.
You say that, he'll probably end up at some mid-table Premier League
side.
That's
true, yeah. Okay, so do you want to explain what the situation was going into the final day, Chris, in terms of Zenit and CSKA looking to get into the Champions League?
Yeah, exactly. So CSKA, defending champions, were second, a point ahead of Zenit, and that is the way it finished. Both won. CSKA thumped Antti at home, and really Viktor Honcharenko, since taking over from Leonard Slutsky, has done an extremely good job, I think, to ensure that CSKA finished in the Champions League places. Zenit won at Lokomotiv, which was a game I commentated on. They were pretty impressive against a Lokomotiv side with nothing to play for. They've already won the Russian Cup. So for the second season in a row, Zenit miss out on a place in the Champions League. Now, this is a club with massive ambitions, a huge budget, a sponsor in Gazprom, who are one of the most wealthiest owners of a football club anywhere, frankly. Mm. Two seasons in a row without being at Europe's top table has not gone down well whatsoever. And Mircea Lucescu, at the time of recording, he is still in a job. Whether he leaves I don't know. He hasn't had a happy first season in Russia at all. And ultimately, Zenit's minimum requirement, top two, they failed to achieve it.
Okay, so bad news for Zenit, and you wonder who they'll be looking to try and sign next. Chris, what else you got up your sleeve today?
Well, I was just going to say, on Luchescu, he gave an interview to the to Zenit, an official interview, which was published, which was quite refreshing, given sometimes clubs are reticent to give any type of opinion from a coach, even if they have said it.
Yeah.
Basically, he's been extremely unhappy all season with pitches, with the Russian Federation, with referees, with everybody, basically. And I'm just going to read a thing. I'll give some context. So he said at the start, he said, "I've had 40 years as a coach without a break. There's not many managers like me. My experience, I think, gives me a right to speak out," which is a great start to an interview.
You know something good's
about
to happen.
Here we go. So he, first of all, he's had a big falling out with Oleg Shatov, one of Zenit's front three, a Russia international who's not in the Confederations Cup squad. He said this: "Titles are won not only on the football field. It's very sad that Shatov's agent and Spartak are friends. Spartak and Zenit have a great rivalry, by the way. And he created some problems for us. This has never happened to me before." Then he went on to the professional league and said, "It should be relocated in St. Petersburg with the federation based in Moscow." He says that in Italy that happens. The federation's in Rome, the league's based in Milan. And he said, basically, that's the reason we get all these ridiculous decisions, including, he said, now Zenit didn't finish second because they lost to Tirit Grozny at home when they, in his words, were forced to play that league game in their new stadium, which is open for the World Cup.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And for the Confederations Cup. The pitch was a joke. They lost the game. They ended up finishing third. And he said, "I requested that we did not play there. I was told by the Federation that we had to test the pitch for the Confederations Cup."
Mm. So maybe just calling out some people on his way out the door.
I think so. Mudslinging. And would you like one more very interesting stat?
Yeah, go for it.
About Russia. So the Petrovsky, Zenit's home, you've probably seen, definitely in the Champions League, great floodlights and a brilliant stadium. They're moving Zenit to this new huge stadium for the World Cup. The Petrovsky is going to be used next season in the Russian Premier League because, I just kicked the mic in excitement, a club called Tosno have been promoted. They're from a tiny town of only 40,000. So they play in like a, you know, a shed basically. They're going to play in the Petrovsky next season. So Zenit St. Petersburg are going to have an away game at their spiritual home.
Very good, Chris.
Yep.
Okay, we don't have quite time to talk about what Leonid Slutsky might bring to Watford.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the job he's been linked with. That'd be mad, wouldn't it?
Do you know he did an interview when he mentioned Ipswich Town?
You keep bringing this up to me
all the time. I'd love to see him at Portman Road. It would be... He keeps on saying he's ready for a job in England. I wonder if he's ready for the Pirelli Stadium on a Tuesday night.
Okay, let's talk Spanish football next.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
Joining us on Football in Europe now is Spanish football writer for The Times, Joe Casanelli. Joe, thanks for coming on the show as always, mate.
No worries, pleased to be here.
We have our new Spanish champion. It is Real Madrid for the first time in 2012. They got a 2-0 win at Malaga. I mean, it was the situation, Joe, where things could have been nervy for them because, I mean, they had to avoid defeat in essence and hope with Real Madrid, with Barcelona needing a win. But 2 minutes in, they were essentially gifted the first goal.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you go into a game like that, there is the chance for nerves and what better start could you make, really? It's one of those things. There was a lot of talk going into the game, especially from the Catalan media, that Michel, who's a Real Madrid legend, is the manager of Malaga. And I'm sure when Barcelona saw that after 2 minutes Cristiano Ronaldo had scored, they thought, oh God, here we go. But I'm not insinuating anything there. However, there was a very, very good start for Real Madrid. And, you know, once you're 1-0 up after 2 minutes, you're going to go on and win the league, aren't you? You know, you're going to get that boost, and that's exactly what Real Madrid did.
2012, the last title, which amazed me, really, for a side of Real Madrid's, you know, prowess and everything. First coach since Jose Mourinho to win it, Zinedine Zidane. How did he do it? And is this sort of... Because some people still seem to think that Zidane might not be the best coach in the world, but he seems to be bringing trophies to the Bernabeu.
Yeah, well, first on your first point, I find it actually incredible that it's Real Madrid's first title. since 2012, you know, considering that they've won two Champions Leagues in the meantime, especially. I just find it incredible. They've spent a lot of money, and even Atletico Madrid have won one in that, you know, in that five-year period. So I'm sure that the Bernabeu faithful are very pleased to have won a league title. At the start of the season, they made no bones about the fact that they actually wanted the league more than anything this year, you know, having won two of the last three Champions Leagues, and they've got it. On the second point, you know, I was one of those people, I have to put my hands up and say, I wasn't sure about Zinedine Zidane when he first came in. It looked to, you know, sort of be benefiting from the fact that he wasn't Rafa Benitez, basically, and that the player's just got a natural new manager boost, if you like. In that first 6 months, everything that could have gone right for him did. And they won the Champions League. And then this year, well, I thought, you know, now we're going to see Zidane. There was a period in the middle of the season, about 15, 20 games, where they just kept winning, or at least avoiding defeat. And they weren't playing very well, but they just kept grinding out results. And that's what champions do. And essentially, Real Madrid have won the league because their squad is better than Barcelona's squad. Their first 11s are very even, and perhaps even Barcelona's is better. But Real Madrid have won the league because of their squad, because they can bring James Rodriguez, because they can bring Marco Asensio, Lucas Vazquez off the bench to change a game in which they might be struggling. And Zinedine Zidane has managed to rotate the squad well, and I think over the course of the season, improved his tactical nous and shown himself to be a worthy coach at this level.
Yeah, interesting, because Real Madrid have done it in sort of the shadow of this transfer ban as well, managed to retain that great squad, bringing in Morata as well back prior to that as well. But what's interesting, Joe, I saw quotes from Isco, who laid on the first goal beautifully for Ronaldo at the weekend, showed what he can do through the middle, and he probably makes Ronaldo a better centre-forward when Isco plays. He says he's staying, which is presumably a major boost for Real Madrid.
Yes, well, I mean, Isco is one of those players who, again, like Zidane, I wasn't too sure about, in that he never really had his chance, and every time he played, it was against, you know, one of the sort of, in inverted commas, lesser sides in La Liga, and he, you know, in the big games, he hadn't really turned up. He looked to be a bit of a flat-track bully. However, since Gareth Bale has been out injured, he's been the one that stepped up and said, you know, I'm here, I can play, I can do this. And he does actually, you know, whisper it quietly, but Real Madrid actually do look a better team, shall we say, without Gareth Bale in there. Not necessarily because Gareth Bale was a bad player. Of course he's not. He's a world-class, fantastic player. But with the way that Cristiano Ronaldo scores goals and works in tandem with Karim Benzema, they're playing a 4-4-2 diamond with Isco in the number 10 role. And it's just working for them completely. Whereas with Ronaldo, you know, playing on the right of a 4-3 with Bale on the left and vice versa, it worked, but it just didn't work quite as well. And Isco staying is a huge boost because, I mean, Real Madrid, as I said before, they have an amazing squad. But I think that that squad is going to be whittled down this summer because it's a World Cup year. James isn't going to want to hang around for another season on the bench. Morata, I think, has a massive decision to make about his future as well, because with rumours surrounding Diego Costa's future in European football, there's a chance for him to step up to the plate and be Spain's number one striker at next year's World Cup.
You mentioned those leaving. So much of the British media is talking about David De Gea and his potential move to Real Madrid. What's the news in Spain? Do they expect De Gea, and who else do they think Real Madrid may sign, given that they can now sign players again as of this summer?
Yeah, well, all the talk has been surrounding De Gea and Eden Hazard of Chelsea. There's obviously the charm offensive, shall we say, led by Ass and Marca, which sort of, you know, comes with a front page and quotes from famous ex-Real Madrid players calling them world-class, etc., etc. We know that De Gea came very close to signing for Madrid a couple of years ago, and fully expect that if there is one big move to happen this summer, then that will be it. It's quite harsh on Keylor Navas, I think, as well, who, while he had a sort of iffy first half of the season, he's been excellent, especially towards the late stages of this season against Atletico Madrid, where the score at 2-1, 20 minutes to go, he makes a stunning double save to deny Carrasco and Gamero, which could have changed the Champions League semi-final with the last 20 minutes, Atletico needing two goals. You just never know. But, you know, Real Madrid is a team of Galacticos, and there's probably no more Galactico a goalkeeper than De Gea. I think that is the one to keep an eye on. All the talk is that that is going to happen. He wants to return to Spain. He's from Madrid, of course, and his girlfriend also, who plays a big role in this, she's from Madrid, and, you know, I'm just sat here looking out my window. It's 26 degrees. It's not even summer yet. And why would you want to be there? Well, why would you want to be in Manchester when you could be here, rather?
Joe, don't insult us. We're over here.
It's a lovely day as well.
It's actually a lovely day today. But let's talk about Barcelona, Joe, because they knew whatever happened, they had to win against Eibar. They were actually 2-0 down. Incredible game. Barcelona missing a host of chances. Barca went on to win 4-2. Lionel Messi ends up with the Pichichi, the top scorer award, with 37 league goals this season. But obviously it was Luis Enrique's last home game in charge of the club. There is the Copa del Rey to come. Where are we on the new head coach? Because I think Barca have hinted that we're close to knowing who's going to be Enrique's successor.
Yeah, well, obviously no official announcement has been made about that, but it does seem as if all sort of eyes are on Ernesto Valverde, the Athletic Bilbao manager. He has said that he's leaving the Basque side, and as a former Barcelona player, admittedly, he's not a legendary Barcelona player. You know, he's not a Luis Enrique type figure or Pep Guardiola type figure. However, he's sort of appears to be the anointed one who will come in and take over the reins. So that's as far as we are in that. I think that maybe after the Copa del Rey final, there'll be a more formal announcement, largely just to, you know, because of respect for the job that Enrique has done. And also, of course, Athletic season wasn't over until, you know, until today, essentially. So I don't think they wanted to disturb that. I think that it was a mutual parting of the ways on Valverde's part and obviously Enrique's part with Barcelona. So I think that he's going to be the new Barcelona manager. You know my luck that, you know, tomorrow they'll announce it's Jorge Sampaoli and that'd be proved completely wrong. But if I were a betting man, I would say that I would be putting money on Ernesto Valverde.
It looks like Sampaoli's heading to the Argentina job just a year away from a World Cup. He's going to have to enable them to qualify, first of all, of course. What does that mean for Sevilla? And do you think Sampaoli would be a good fit at Argentina? He's been very upset this season when journalists have asked him whether he's going, but it's sometimes slightly annoying when they do then end up in the national team job.
Yeah, well, that's quite funny that he's got annoyed and annoyed and annoyed, and then it was on Friday that he gave a press conference basically saying, of course I want to go to Argentina, it's my national team. How could I turn down the opportunity to lead them? You know, last summer I'd committed to Sevilla, but, you know, now it's different. The circumstances are different. And I think he'll be a good fit for them in that they essentially need a kick up the backside, really, don't they? They're languishing, I think, in fifth position in a South American qualification. You look at the squad of players available to them, there is absolutely no way that they should be anywhere near there. And, you know, the thought of them not being at next summer's World Cup, you know, with it essentially being Messi's last opportunity to win an international trophy at the peak of his powers. You know, they've got to get there. And I think under a manager like Jorge Sampaoli, they will do. And all the talk now is of Sampaoli and Eduardo Berizzo of Celta Vigo, his countryman, coming in to take over the reins. I think there's going to be a bit of a managerial domino effect this summer in Spain, because it seems that Maurizio Pellegrino of Alaves, who's done such a former Liverpool defender who, I must admit, is a much better manager than he was a footballer, he's done a very good job with Alaves, and it looks as if he'll go and take over at Celta Vigo, which then leaves the Alaves manager's job open, so someone will take over there. And you just see all the pieces of the jigsaw moving around. And I think that it's good in a way. And also, as we spoke about earlier this season, one of the key things in La Liga is that you can only manage one La Liga team per season. So managers have to be very careful when they make a decision about their future. And I think that it's a sort of good idea to have, because it means that clubs have to sort of keep faith with the manager, and a manager can't, you know, then leave a club and say, well, don't worry, in a couple of months I'll be back, and, you know, do the Big Sam rescue act, if you like.
I'd love to see Big Sam Alaves, by the way.
I reckon he'd do a job there.
And it's Big funny Sam Aladici.
And it's funny to think about, of all these managerial changes, the one man who's certain to have his job next season is the Real Madrid manager, because that's always up for grabs, it appears, every summer. Let's talk about Atletico, Joe, briefly as well, because they said goodbye to the Calderon at the weekend. They, of course, had played their last Champions League game there against Real Madrid. But it looked like it was an emotional occasion at the Calderon.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you were writing scripts for a football match, then to say goodbye to the Vicente Calderon, you know, and have Fernando Torres scoring twice within the first 10 minutes, you know, that this is the Hollywood script, if you've ever seen one. You know, Fernando Torres, who, you know, is the whole phrase of barn door with a banjo all season, and then last game at the Calderon, two in the first 10 minutes, it was, you know, he looked like a man possessed, basically. He wanted to say goodbye to the stadium, you know, in the best way possible. And in true sort of Torres style, in just before the hour mark, he's running through on goal, rounds the goalkeeper, and then manages to have his shot blocked on the line. It's rolling in over the line, and Griezmann runs in, taps it in, but it was ruled offside to deny him a hat-trick. So in a way, that was sort of fitting. But I mean, the way that the fans pulled together to say goodbye to the Calderon, of course, it is and it isn't Atletico's last ever game there, because they're playing a friendly there the day after the Copa del Rey final, just to ensure that Atletico will be the last team to ever step foot on the pitch. But this was the real last game for them, in that it, you know, it was a competitive game, and what better way to say goodbye? They just completely blew Athletic away, and Fernando Torres scored twice, and their late goal to sort of put the seal on things. And Simeone looked like he was about to, when Torres scored that second goal, I genuinely thought for a minute Simeone was about to run on the pitch, rip his shirt jacket off and start celebrating with the players. He was so emotional.
I'm sure he would have absolutely loved to. Just one more on Atletico, Joe. We were in the Calderon together for that semi-final second leg. To me, certainly looked like Simeone was going to stay for at least one more year. They're heading into their new stadium. With Lacazette arriving, do you expect Simeone to stay, first of all? And do you expect Griezmann to stay or to leave?
Simple answer to the first question is yes, because Simeone has actually said that he's going to stay. He said it yesterday after the game. So that's that taken care of. It was sort of a badly kept secret anyway that he was, you know, he was planned on leading them into the new stadium. And with Lacazette arriving, as you said, that looks... You know, he looks like he's going to lead them into the future. Of course, that relies on their transfer ban being lifted this summer, which is still a big if. You know, if FIFA say no, then there won't be a Lacazette coming in. However, I think any sort of potential arrival for Lacazette or any other striker won't really have that big an influence on Griezmann's future, because I think that Griezmann has said on numerous occasions that his future is linked directly to that of Simeone's, with Simeone having nailed his colours to the mast and said, yeah, look, I'm going to stay. I'm here for another year. I think that Griezmann will stay for the year. Like I said before about Real Madrid's squad, this is sort of the contrary, in that Griezmann he's going to start every game for Atletico Madrid because he's their main man. And the risks in a World Cup year of upping sticks, moving maybe to a new country, because I don't think he'd go anywhere else in Spain, even though there are Real Madrid rumours, moving to a new country, new language, new manager, new style of football, all, you know, on the eve of a World Cup is potentially dangerous. You know, he could move, say, to Manchester United and things don't go well for him. He doesn't pick up the language. You know, he gets a little niggle or isn't played in the position that he likes to play in. And all of a sudden, France's main man for 2018 isn't in the kind of form that he needs to be in going into that tournament. So I think he will stay.
Joe, thank you very much. Very interesting indeed. Thank you very much for joining us on the show.
No worries, chaps.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
Big thanks to Joe Casanelli, as always, for coming on the show. He mentioned that great send-off, probably send-off for Fernando Torres of the weekend to Kaut the previous weekend with that hat-trick for Feyenoord to win them the title. He's announced his retirement this week. He won't be playing for Feyenoord in the Champions League. Chris, I thought you might be tempted to do that, but I guess it doesn't get much better than that, that final day win.
I'm a big fan of people leaving absolutely on a high. Who knows what will happen to Feyenoord next season? They may win the title again by a counter, but they might not. 37 in July. His style of football has not changed, has it? He looks like the same guy that we saw running around at Anfield. I'm sure it takes his toll. Look, what a way to go out. In, you know, one more season maybe, but in 10 years' time, he was going to be the guy that scored the hat-trick, that secured their first title in 18 years, and then retired.
Signing off in style, much like John Terry.
Much like John Terry in the 26th minute. Although, you know, it's John Terry. He'd probably come on and score in the cup final.
I know. That's true.
And look, John Terry will be back at Chelsea at some stage in the future. Dirk Cout will definitely be back at Feyenoord in some respect in the future. Who knows, he might be a future manager.
Well, let's turn our attention to Italy. That actually brings us quite nicely onto Italy, because even the Lazio fans had a banner for Francesco Totti at the weekend to show. I think they called him something like the banner that for Totti, of course, playing for their fierce rivals Roma in his final season. It says, the lifetime enemies say goodbye to Francesco Totti. And one of the ultras after said, he has been the greatest of enemies, which I think is quite a nice way to put it.
That is respect, isn't it? That's when you know you've really achieved something, if Lazio fans are giving you a...
Exactly.
Fond's the wrong word, but any sort of farewell.
Yeah, acknowledging what you've achieved.
Yeah.
Well, we have to acknowledge what Juve have done, because it's six league titles in a row, and this is a side that was in Serie B not too long ago as part of the Calciopoli scandal. Six titles in a row, a 3-0 win against Crotone, expected at the weekend, Chris. Paulo Dybala with a wonderful free kick in that 3-0 victory for Juve. And we were just waiting for the inevitable it coming days after their Coppa Italia success too.
Yeah, exactly. So... two parts of the treble down. Can they make it an extraordinary treble and win the Champions League as well? Remember, they lost at Roma, but you always felt that they were, you know, they did rest a few players, and they knew that they had the gap, and therefore if they beat Crotone, they were going to win the title. Alexandro scoring, Mandzukic scoring, and as you mentioned, Dybala, who is, I mean, we spoke to Joe there about Sampaoli in Argentina. Well, I mean, their forward line is obscene. A certain Gonzalo Higuain, who's not bad as well.
Yeah.
Just phenomenal. I saw Adam Summerton, friend of the show, commentates on Serie A for BT Sport, saying that, I thought he summed it up really well. You know, in the future, in the present sometimes, you think, oh, it's just another Scudetto, it's sixth in a row. At some stage, Juve's era of domination has to come to a close. And you're going to look back on this period and think, that was a historic period of football under... a few managers for Juventus Football Club, different teams, but still consistently winning the league. I think Napoli and Roma are closer than they were last season. But Juve, too good. And what a way to win the Coppa Italia in Rome against Lazio. And they just did the job. They know how to win. They are a team of winners. And they appear to be at the peak of their powers. Can they win the ultimate prize and then 21 years of European hurt by lifting the Champions League in Cardiff?
You'd imagine they rest lots of players for the game against Bologna on the final day of the season. Of course, that 2-0 win over Lazio coming on Wednesday, the 17th of May, so a few days prior to Sunday's victory against Crotone, Dani Alves and Leonardo Bonucci, two of their best players without question this season, getting on the score sheet. So we'll look ahead to Juve's Champions League final in a future edition of the show, because I think they might shade it against Real Madrid. But let's look at the Champions League race now, Chris, because we have Roma and Napoli absolutely free scoring at the moment. Roma 5-3 winners at Chievo at the weekend. Dzeko, I think, on 28 goals now for the season. Napoli 4-1 winners against Fiorentina. Mertens with two in that. How does this look into the final day? Who's going to... because I think they've guaranteed top three between them, haven't they?
Easily, yeah. By far and away... the best three teams in Italy, miles ahead of the rest, Lazio and Atalanta, are going to finish in the Europa League spots. So Roma are 1 point ahead of Napoli. So if they win their game at home to Genoa, it doesn't matter what Napoli do at Sampdoria. It's in Roma's hand for the second automatic Champions League place. Whoever finishes third goes into the playoff, which has been the round where a lot of Italian teams have gone out recently. I would expect Roma or Napoli to go through, but you never know. Italian teams seem to produce their worst performance in the very early stages of the Champions League, year in, year out. Just a word for both of them, though. I mentioned that, you know, the gap is 4 points this season. It's been a lot more to Juventus. Roma in second have scored 87 goals. Juve, champions, only scored 75. Napoli in third, 90 goals. They both have more than 80 points, and whoever does finish third... will feel a little hard done by, given how good they've been. And of course, it's only one more season before Italy, due to the changes in the Champions League, have four automatic places. So this won't be a problem in Serie A. If you look at it this season, Juve, Roma and Napoli would be flying, and it'd be a great battle for fourth, Lazio or Atalanta. But those two teams, neck and neck going into the final day. I say neck and neck. Roma have the advantage, a 1-point lead. And if they beat Genoa at home...
neck and neck.
Not neck and neck. Wait, as soon as those words came out, I said neck and neck. It's rubbish.
Oh, this is a commentator thing, isn't it? We just say stuff and you go, oh, why did I do that?
Rubbish. So we won't delete this. So, yeah, Roma, massive lead ahead of Napoli. But if they beat Genoa at home, they finish second.
Okay, and a certain Simeone scoring for Genoa this season. By the way, Jamie Donnelly tweeted in the week, Chris, and said, just listen to Monday's episode from last week. 100% I agree with the idea of Serie A trio, Juve, Roma and Napoli coming strong. Hashtag cycles. You're talking about how football's cyclical.
Nice word, cyclical.
It's lovely, isn't it? It's nice to say as long as you don't muck it up. We've had tweets in your highlights of the week as well at FIE Podcast. Kalle Timonen says Lazio fans showing their love to Totti in their home match against Inter. La Liga Gav says Jordi Alba's incredible penalty award shows how pathetic La Liga referees have been. Embarrassing. If you haven't seen the Jordi Alba, he just fell over and got a penalty in that win for Barcelona at the weekend.
It's up there with the worst.
I think it's the worst I've ever seen given.
Given how much Gerard Piqué and Barcelona have complained about favourable decisions for Real Madrid. I can think
very easily of a lot of what decisions that have gone Barcelona's way.
Frankly, I think both of you get some favourable decisions, so pipe down.
Yeah, 4-2 win, and luckily Messi missed the kick. So justice was done as Barcelona went on to win regardless against Eibar, who finished 10th, by the way, a town of 27,000 people. Okay, we've deviated slightly. Let's turn our attention
we're back to Spain.
AC Milan, by the way, have qualified for the Europa League. They're in Europe for the first time in 3 years.
Delafeu
scored again.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it reports to be believed. Barcelona said, I think they even said at one point, we're looking to bring him back. They have a buyback and they would look to have him in their squad. So
they can have him just in time for Ronald Koeman to take over in a year.
Exactly, and then loan him out. Okay. Do you want to talk about the Bundesliga, Chris? There was a few things going on. Bayern won the title, of course, well prior to last weekend.
Yeah, just a few. We'll start with, again, another shootout for the automatic Champions League place. A lot of leagues actually were wrapped up, and that was the biggest thing to play for, including in the Premier League. But Borussia Dortmund pipped Hoffenheim, Rob. It was very close.
It certainly was. I mean, Dortmund went into the final day with Hoffenheim with a far superior goal difference, so a win would essentially guarantee them Champions League group stage football. Both teams guaranteed to finish in the top four. Hoffenheim knew they probably had to win. They only drew with Augsburg, which was surprising, a home draw for Julian Nagelsmann and his side. So they go into the playoffs. But it was looking nervy for Dortmund at the time because they were 3-2 down at home to Werder Bremen, who have lost 4-3, 5-3 and 4-3 in their final three games of the season. Absolutely mad. But Mark Bartra returned after the bus attack for the first time. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang scored two, and he took home the Tor Jägerkanon, the top scorer award in Germany. His late penalty to win the game actually saw him go above Lewandowski in the standings to 31. And Lewandowski congratulated him on Twitter for achieving that. I'm sure that Aubameyang would swap it for a Bundesliga title. And after the game, Aubameyang was being interviewed by German TV and had an Italian translator, I think, and said in his, who was actually, I think, the club physio or works, one of the coaching staff. And Aubameyang said, well, we'll know more about my future at the end of the week. And the translator looked at him like, really? Like he did not say that. No.
If you had to pick now, where do you think, will he stay? And if not, where will he go?
I think he won't stay. And I think the door to Real Madrid might be closing in that this summer, as we heard from Joe, if Hazard and David De Gea are the targets, that's a lot of outlay. And two Galacticos for Real Madrid already. Plus, I'm certain Mbappe is their next striker.
In the future, Is Aubameyang good enough for Real Madrid?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think he is. I mean, look, Karim Benzema has gone there and had a very successful time as their number nine. And I think Aubameyang is good enough to play for Real Madrid. But I think maybe because of the emergence of Mbappe, the fact that Real Madrid have tried to keep an eye on Griezmann's situation, that they're not closing the door on that deal either, means that in terms of priority, he slipped down the pecking order.
Yeah.
You know, and it depends what happens with Morata, lots of other things. I don't know now where Aubameyang's going to go. He said for a long time, Spain is where I want to go next. Madrid is, you know, he's. I think his grandfather was from Spain or something. So we'll wait and see. But 31 goals in the league. I mean, that is very, very impressive. And he's done it, scored bucket loads, I think, two or three seasons in a row now as a proper centre forward.
Could go to Manchester City, I guess. Stay there for a couple of years and still go
after that. The Premier League's logical after that because the other one I heard mentioned was Paris Saint-Germain, in that. Obviously, he used to play in Ligue 1 as Chris Parrott.
I dropped my papers when you said you can't go to Paris Saint-Germain. Don't leave Dortmund for Paris Saint-Germain.
I know.
Please.
I know. Pierre. Well, I have no say in it, but I know.
I'm looking at you. Please tell him.
A nice moment there. There was loads happening this weekend, Chris, and we'll talk about the relegation playoff in a moment. But Cologne got into Europe for the first time in 25 years. 2-0 win over Mainz. The pitch invasion was incredible. And Anthony Modeste, their top scorer of the season, was crowd surfing along the whole the pitch invasion.
Was he?
Oh, it's excellent. I'll try and put it on the good Twitter account. And the other thing was the goodbye for Philipp Lahm and Xabi Alonso.
Yeah, two great players, let's be honest. Multiple Champions League winners. Philipp Lahm's a World Cup winner. So is Xabi Alonso. I think we can call them all-time great, certainly of their generation. If you're picking all-star teams,
without question, yeah.
You'd have Lahm as your fullback, and you'd probably have Xabi Alonso as your deep-lying passing central midfielder. But great send-offs for them. You still wonder if, you know, we talk about people going out on the top with Dirk Kuyt. They could definitely do a job somewhere still. We've mentioned what Philipp Lahm is going to do and whether he's going to go into the Bayern hierarchy or the DFB hierarchy or what he's going to do. And Carlo Ancelotti has a lovely singing voice. We saw it again.
Yeah, okay. So I've put together a Spotify playlist, a little compilation of Carlo Ancelotti singing, because he sang, I think it was Pavarotti, at Bayern's celebrations in the city centre, which is the thing they do every time. They take the Meisterschale there, the trophy, and celebrate in the middle of Munich.
Every
year. Yeah, exactly. So,
do you think they book it? They booked it now for next year.
They book it well in advance. So here's... this is Carlo Ancelotti when AC Milan won the league title. This is him singing Alla Milan.
Alla!
Okay, so we know that theme, we know that music, that's familiar. Initial thoughts, Chris? You're the Simon Cowell here.
Then he's through. He's through to the next.
They
still go to the house part, you know?
They still go to judges' houses. Let's go to judges' houses, and that's Real Madrid.
That infers that you still watch the programme.
No, I just know the format. I just know the format. Okay, this is him singing. This is him singing Hala Madrid after winning the Champions League with Real Madrid. Okay, so not in native tongue, so he's doing good here, isn't he?
No, he knows he's a good singer, yeah.
Yeah, Ronaldo, everyone was singing along. And I have to say, a lot of the Bayern players during this, while he was singing Pavarotti, seemed to be laughing. He really goes at that. He's not mucking around. And he even did a duet with Anastasia, I think, who's playing the Allianz soon. I mean, he doesn't...
I love Ancelotti. There, I've said it. As if he won the double at Chelsea and then they binned him off.
I know.
That was that... Of all the Abramovich sackings, that was the most brutal, I think. This guy's... I wonder if that's... I wonder if he's burnt his fingers at the Premier League. You'd still... Or whether he'll have one more go after he's been at Bayern. I don't know.
I think Bayern's his last club. I don't know if he's said that.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. He's got two more years, isn't he?
Yeah, two more years. He's great, though, isn't he? Again, I think, in many ways, I think Bayern Real Madrid's... I'm going to contradict myself because I'm really pleased Juve in the Champions League final, but that would have been a terrific semi-final, not a quarter-final.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, agree. And another title, another league title, of course, for Carlo Ancelotti, as we've discussed many times. Chris, a couple of other things from Germany we want to talk about. Should we go through the relegation battle in Germany?
Yes, Hamburg. They survived again. They had this sort of relegation playoff to see who would finish third bottom and have to face Eintracht Braunschweig to stay in the Bundesliga. And Just talk us through, Rob, the last however long it is. They've never been relegated, Hamburg, and they consistently come up with last-minute winners or goals to keep them in the top flight.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, they were minutes away from having to play in that relegation playoff for the third time in four seasons. It was 1-1 with Wolfsburg, who started the day 15th. Hamburg was 16th, so third from bottom. And Luka Waldschmidt, who'd only turned 21 in the week, headed home a winning goal in the final minute to the game. He did that stupid Griezmann Drake celebration thing, which I thought, just celebrate. You've kept Hamburg in the Bundesliga.
Just go mental. Run around.
They're the only founding member of the Bundesliga, by the way, to have played every season. So we're including Bayern, Dortmund, anyone you can think of there, and they somehow survive again. It seems that they are avoiding their inevitable fate that at some point that they will drop down.
So surely at some stage, because whenever teams, big clubs survive, they say, okay, this is the lowest point, it's never going to happen again, we're going to build. Hamburg never seemed to be able to do that. Them and Sunderland in the last few seasons have basically been the same, and then Sunderland have just through no investment and
well, Hamburg
and
looked
no
like
positivity.
They were going to. I want to say they had a handful of points, three or four points after like 10 games.
Yeah.
I mean, they were in a real mess, and Marcus Gisdol has turned things around, but
you
just, very lucky
forever,
again.
You just think, talking of cyclical things, you just think, come on, one summer, get your targets and build a side, even if you finish mid-table, you know. Just don't be going into
just
the last five games looking like you're staring
relegation. I mean, they finished mid-table, but it wasn't comfortable until right at the end of the campaign.
Yeah.
But amazing. And now Wolfsburg will play a local rival in Eintracht Braunschweig as well. So amazing. Wolfsburg might be, having finished second 2 years ago, relegated from the Bundesliga. What else do we want to talk about? Andreas Christensen, quick one. He's returning to Chelsea. I was commentating on Gladbach's 2-2 draw with Darmstadt. Gladbach miss out on European football, having been in the Champions League for a couple of seasons. But, I mean, things really had to go their way in that final game. And they needed Dortmund to win the cup. It's a bizarre scenario. But Mahmoud Dahoud said a fond farewell to the Gladbach fans before joining Dortmund. And Christensen did too. He's had a 2-year loan at Chelsea, on loan from Chelsea.
All right, talk us through Christensen. So, you know, Chelsea are going to be linked with every defender. John Terry's leaving, albeit he's not been first choice. Nathan Aki, who knows? Is Christensen good enough to start in their back three?
I don't know if he would displace any of the current three who have been so good together this year.
Not even Azpilicueta. He's
some would say he's been their best defender this
year. He has,
year.
He's Mr. Dependable.
What Christensen is good at, I mean, he's quite a tall guy, he's about 6'2", he's 21 years old, already a senior Danish international, is that in the Gladbach team, he has the best tackle success rate, header success rate, and the best passing success rate of the whole squad. Something like 93% of his passes. So we're talking about a ball-playing centre-back, and this is what everyone wants. And David Luiz is a ball-playing centre-back. He's not going to be around forever. Christensen's dad has said before, if he's going to be sat on the bench, he doesn't want to go back to Chelsea. So presumably Chelsea will have a look at him and say, you know, maybe he's going to get some minutes this season. What Max Eberl, the sporting director at Gladbach, has said, look, we're saying goodbye to Christensen today, but we may be able to bring him back. But Eberl was realistic. He says, you know, he disputed that they have a 30 million euro transfer kitty this summer, which doesn't seem much by Premier League standards.
No.
He says, if they want 25 million for him, there's absolutely no way we're going to pay that. And that's completely understandable.
And they will. I think your entire 30 million transfer kitty will go on Andreas Christensen.
What, you think they would do it?
No, I think that would be the price
that
would be quoted.
Oh, without question. Yeah, without question. So Chelsea are getting a very good centre-back. I think he'll go there. They've lost Ivanovic and Terry. I think he'll go there as fourth-choice centre-back. I mean, he's competing with Zouma, I suppose, for a spot there as well. But
they will. I mean, they have a lot of games, you know. And
Champions League next year is no European football for Chelsea this season.
Yeah, and maybe, look, Conte has a summer to look at Christensen as well on the training ground, because he won't have seen... Okay, you've got to watch videos, I'm sure. Interesting to see, as you said. But it might mean that they don't need to go out. There are areas they would like to strengthen, but they might think, you know, at centre-half, we don't need to go out and spend.
Yes, I think so. I think they'll look at it and go, we've got five guys there who are all senior international players.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't need to. Okay, Chris, we're going to finish with a Europa League preview, the final preview, because that's on Wednesday. Manchester United against Ajax. Ajax, 25 years on from winning this competition with Danny Blint as the captain, beating Torino in the final. What are your thoughts ahead of the showpiece in Stockholm?
I think it might be similar to the Anderlecht game, particularly the second leg. There's all the talk of Ajax having nothing to play for. I never agree with that in a final. I think both teams have as much to lose. Once you get to the final, you know, Ajax haven't won a European trophy for a very long time. I hope they go out and they do play as fearlessly as they did. You know, Kasper Dolberg has been brilliant. I'd like to see more of Justin Kluivert and the rest of their ridiculously young side. But Mourinho is the master in finals, isn't he? There's the reason he has his record. Paul Pogba, I just wonder, so much has been written about him. When I've seen him, I think he's been brilliant, frankly. And in that Anderlecht game when I was there, he's passing. And I just wonder whether United will have too much power. And Pogba may well really have one of his nights.
I mean, because you worry the occasion could potentially get to Ajax. I mean, on the final day of the season, the average age of their team was below 20. Average age of their team was below 20.
And I remember in Lyon, when they were suddenly a goal away from going out, fairly sure they brought on Kluivert in the last 10 minutes, a young winger. Now that's great. For me, that's what football is, it's entertainment. And that is a thoroughly entertaining move for a coach to do. Whether against a team of Mourinho and how savvy he is, I think it would be a great contrast. What they can't do, Ajax, is let United play on the break. So they barely ever have the chance to play on the break, United. I think that's the way they would like to, with the pace of Rashford and Mourinho as a manager. So United, I think, would like Ajax to come at them.
Peter Bosz, by the way, as well, has been named Coach of the Year in the Netherlands, despite the fact that Van Bronckhorst won the Eredivisie title with Feyenoord.
So I don't know what you think. I think United and Mourinho would be happy for Ajax to come and try and play an expansive match. What they've struggled with this season is when teams have come and sat in, which isn't Ajax's natural game. So you were at Carrington, United's training ground. Spoke to Jesse Lingard, amongst others. He must be loving life.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to get it out of him. He's a very reserved kind of guy, and you'll be able to see the interviews, I think, on Air Sport TV in Ireland and on their Twitter channel as well. But he's the kind of guy who seems to deliver in finals. I mean, I was speaking to Lingard about that and saying, look, you've scored now in a FA Cup final, a League Cup final, and the Community Shield final, Wembley being the lineage between all those things. But he might well be in place for a start. I don't know about you. I mean, you try and press it on them and say, look, what would it mean for you to start the final? And he said, obviously, you know, being a localish lad, he's from Warrington.
Yeah.
He said for him and Marcus Rashford in particular, he was talking about Marcus, saying it would mean a lot for us, being guys who've come through, to be playing in a European final. I imagine Rashford will start up front, that Rashford is the centre forward, no Ibrahimovic. But I think they're confident. What was interesting was speaking when I was chatting to Phil Jones. I was saying, okay, so you might start a centre back. Daley Blint expected to play. I was like, what have you made of Ajax this year? And he goes, I'll be honest, I haven't really seen him. So what the gamble, I think, is for Mourinho a little bit here is that he's putting the whole season on this game. In essence, you get your Champions League qualification, you get this trophy for the first time on what is essentially an unknown entity. No one really knows what this Ajax team is or is not capable of. We only know from flurries up and down in the Europa League, a late challenge for the Eredivisie title, which came up short. And there is an element of a gamble, I think, here from Mourinho on the whole campaign. But I think when he saw the semi-final lineup, he was very confident that that was the best way to get into the Champions League, and he gets a trophy. It all hangs on 90 minutes midweek in Stockholm now.
Yeah, what it is, it's a brilliant final anyway for the competition. And of course, yeah, Champions League football at stake for United. I hope it's an entertaining game. But I just think Mourinho's records in final is so good for a reason. If I had to tip, I think they'll be too strong for Ajax.
Yeah, agree. Okay, by the way, Chris, 250,000 listeners now to this podcast that we've had. 250,000 downloads. Not bad, is it?
Not bad. Well, yeah, haven't bored too many people then. No, that's excellent.
But thank you to everyone who downloads. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're coming to the end of another season. We really do appreciate it. Chris, next week, we're talking about a team of the year.
Team of the year, yeah.
You got your thoughts together for that?
Are we allowed to use...
What are you worried about? You can do whatever you want.
Are we allowed to use Scottish players? Or players from... That's European football, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, it is European football, but we never talk about Scotland.
I know we don't. But we should say congratulations, Celtic.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people will sniff at it because our Rangers aren't what they were. To go through, anyone going through a season unbeaten is a phenomenal record.
It certainly is, and Brendan Rodgers has absolutely crushed it.
He has. And yes, he might have some Brentisms, but I think he is an extremely good coach.
Okay, that's all we have time
for. Arsenal, are you listening?
Mate, imagine that.
Why not?
Oh, come on.
He almost won the league with Liverpool.
It's not going to happen. That's not going to happen, though, is he? He's not going to go to Arsenal.
Almost certainly not, but I would. I'd like to see Brendan Rodgers given another go in the Premier League.
If you are still with us to the end of this podcast, you have heard a huge call from Chris Parrott. That's what you're made to do, Chris.
That's what I'm made to do. That's why you pay me all this money to be on this.
Yeah, we got to discuss that. That's all we have time for on Football in Europe this week. If you enjoy the show, please tweet us at FIE Podcast and leave us a review on iTunes. Bye, Chris.
Bye.
This is Football in Europe.